Welcome to the Match Fit Conditioning Podcast. Transforming over 100,000 footballers worldwide. Everything we do is aimed at enabling you to gain an edge completely by yourself without needing help from a training partner or teammate. Open yourself to doing things smarter and with more intention, focus and attention to detail than your teammates, opponents, and even your coaches. Are you ready to get match fit?
Have a kind of special treat for you guys, and something you guys can benefit from, but we'll do that at the end. So just looking at our Facebook community, it looks like we've gone live there as well. So any questions that you might have, just drop it in the comments and we'll try and get around to it, okay? So just remember, anything strength conditioning related. So I'll do my best to pop through the comments and try and find some of your questions. So still Steve has come in with, what's the best way to train for conditioning? So when we're talking about conditioning, we're probably talking about energy systems development, ways we can kind of produce energy into high intensity and big moments in games. And what I'd probably say is that there's a whole bunch of different ways we can train conditioning. I think conditioning for a footballer, if possible, should be running based, because the sport is running based. It should involve accelerations, decelerations, changes of direction. And if a player is technically good and has a pretty good base of training, it can also involve a ball as well. So we need to make sure that what we're doing is replicating the demands of the game. And obviously with a sport like football, there are real high intensity moments that are interspersed with moments that are quite low intensity, and that might be when the ball goes out of play, when the referee needs to make a decision or something like that. So you do get a real kind of difference in intensities throughout games. It's high intensity moments that produce big moments in games and decide whether games are won or lost. So we need to make sure that we are having real high intensity moments interspersed with lower intensity for recovery. So one of the biggest mistakes we see is long, slow distance running for footballers. And we know it's not something that is effective at training specifically for football performance. So you should definitely have lots of high intensity, lots of accelerations, decelerations, and we should be looking to mimic what's going on in the game. So I hope that answers your question still, Steve. So I'll scroll through and see if I can find anything else. So we got Joey, who's come in with a question, who's a goalie and he's 17 years old. And Joey's asking how to improve his vertical jump. So vertical jump is going to be really, really important for a goalie who literally not only needs to have good lower body power generally for performance in the game, like a lot of players do need that lower body power, but he literally needs to jump and grab a ball from the sky to help his team out. So one of the simplest ways of improving your vertical jump is to practice jumping. So jumping is a technical skill. So one of the ways you can do that that's quite low intensity and low impact on the joints is box jumps. So keep the reps low. So you probably need something like 2 or 3 sets, probably as a minimum of probably not more than 5 to 6 reps. If we're really looking at training power, our reps should be in the lower rep ranges. So that's something that can go into your jump training. And we can also do a wide variety of loaded jumps. So we make sure that we're hitting kind of both ends of the spectrum. So we've got loaded jumps that you can use are things like barbell jumps, dumbbell jumps. You can use a trap bar if you have that ability to. You can also wear a weighted vest. So you've got a whole bunch of options in how you can train your jumps. I would just say make sure you always do it towards the start of a session while you're fresh. Because when we're training power, we want to make sure that we can train at 100% intensity. So there needs to be maximal intent to jump high at all times as well. So 2 simple ways, box jumps and any types of loaded jumps can be incorporated in the same session or can even be incorporated before a technical session. And that way you can keep improving your jumps. So Joey, I hope that helps. I'm just going to scroll through and see if we've got any other questions there. So anything strength and conditioning related, guys, you can just drop down in the comments and I'll try and get to it within around half an hour. So we got a question coming from Josh Wright, and this is something that we get quite a lot, and it's kind of how long is a piece of string with this one. So Josh Wright's asking how long he should take to strengthen an injured hamstring before returning to the game, and that can really vary on the severity of your hamstring strain or whatever you've done to injure your hamstring. So we know what types of exercises can prevent hamstring strains. We know what types of exercises can rehab you and get you back to playing the game. But you need to make sure that you're working closely with a physio if you are injured to ensure that you're trying to fix the root cause of a problem. Because sometimes there are other factors involved in injuries, and it's never as simple as it takes 4 weeks to get back from this type of injury. Any return from injuries should be kind of the constraints that bring you back should be criteria based. So it should never be time based. It should be, do you feel pain with this movement? Are you able to achieve a certain amount of this? So what I would say is you're going to need to strengthen your hamstring, try and fix the root cause of the problem. And then you're probably going to have to go through some sort of a return to running program that's going to bring you back to team training. So physios usually recommend kind of running programs that gradually increase in intensity over time. So you can measure intensity usually in the kind of percentage of your maximal speed. So return to running programs generally look something like you might have a certain amount of sets and reps at 50% of your top speed over 50 or 60 meters. Eventually you would have faster accelerations leading to higher speeds. Once you can go through that with no pain, then you can probably return to technical drills. You'd probably be able to return to some team training that doesn't involve really high intensity actions. And if you can pass through those types of things without pain, then you're probably going to be able to return back to full training for a period of time. And if you can get through that with no pain, then you should go back into playing actual match play. Most injuries happen during matches, not during training. So it's going to be a long build up to get you to the point where you can play matches. And even then, you're going to need to be exposed in small periods and increase slowly across time. So it's not like, okay, well, it's been 3 weeks and now you can go play matches for 90 minutes. It's going to be, what do I need to do to get from point A to point B to point C? And then eventually you're going to go back into playing matches, and that's going to be graded in terms of the amount of opposition or the type of opposition you play. So often you'll see that pro players and the kind of real established players will play in the reserves for a little while and their game time will be limited. And that's usually because the intensity is going to be lower than what they're used to, and the intensity that they were injured at just due to the lower physicality when compared to pros, between the reserves and the pros. And that way people can use that to get back into playing matches. So make sure you're working with a physio, make sure your return to play is criteria-based and not time-based. And we're not sure how long it's going to take for you to get back from your injury, but if you follow the general kind of guideline I've given you and work with a physio, that's going to make sure you can get back to playing at your best. So Josh, I hope that answered your question. We'll see what else is going on here. So got a question coming in that's, how can I increase my speed? So it's quite a broad question, and it's obviously one we get fairly often. Speed's really important and can have an impact it can have an impact on the level that you play at. So it's been found that the higher level you play at, the higher your speed is. So by being able to access kind of a higher level of speed and higher top speeds is going to give you the ability to play at higher levels, supposing your technical ability is also high enough as well. So how do you increase your speed? You practice sprinting as often as possible. And that doesn't mean it needs to be four times a day, but it needs to be kind of potentially 3 to 4 times a week. You need to practice running fast when you're fresh. So it doesn't make sense to practice sprinting and acceleration whilst under fatigue, because you're not going to be able to train at the intensity you need to increase your speed. And you're probably not going to be able to be as coordinated as possible. You're probably not going to be able to have good rhythm in your running and your sprinting if you're fatigued. So you need to practice sprinting 3 or 4 times a week, potentially. You need to make sure that you're doing it when you're fresh. And aside from that, you probably need to identify what the biggest thing is that's holding your ability to run fast back. So everyone's going to need to improve slightly different things. So there's going to be some key components in sprinting fast that we see in elite sprinters, and we also see similar things in elite footballers. So we have a stiff ankle. So when the athlete's foot or footballer's foot lands on the floor, their heel generally doesn't strike the floor. They contact the floor with the ball of their feet. That allows them to use the stretch shortening cycle of the Achilles tendon. And essentially, they get a whole load of elastic, almost free energy, and they're able to run at higher top speeds. So if you film yourself and you feel that you're running flat-footed and your heel touches the floor, every time your foot contacts the floor, it's not like your foot's frozen, then that's something that you'll need to address with calf strengthening exercises, with plyometric exercises, where you're going to do your best to imagine there's almost like a credit card under the heel, and there's going to be no contact during your continuous hurdle jumps and things like that. That's one aspect of it. There's also a number of other aspects in terms of sprinting. So core stability could be your problem. There could be a huge amount of movement left to right with your trunk when you're sprinting, and that's something that could be slowing you down. So that might be something you have to do in the gym to address your speed. So really filming your sprinting sessions and filming some of your speed work is going to be really useful, because then you can identify what's the kind of biggest key factor that's slowing me down. And I know that on the MatchFit blog, we've got some articles looking at speed. So if you have a look at those articles and you film yourself sprinting, you can kind of tick off the boxes. You can say, okay, well, am I doing this? Do I have a stiff ankle? Do I have a trunk that stays still when I'm sprinting? And that way you can start to identify what you need to work on individually. And then when you put that in the general rules that I've given you, practice sprinting often, and also make sure you're sprinting when you're fresh, you're pretty quickly going to be able to increase your speed. And hopefully that's going to make a real difference during the games. So I hope that answers your question. And check out the blog for articles and speed that I'm sure I know we do have up there. And I'm sure that's going to help out a lot. Okay, let's have a look at what else is coming in. So we've got a question that's coming in on the Facebook community that we'll take a look at. So the question that's coming is how to lose weight on the legs. So this is often a question that we get, and sometimes it's not just the legs, it's different areas of the body. And the simple answer is you really can't kind of reduce fat on certain areas of the body. So if you're eating in a calorie deficit, I know we're moving on to nutrition a little bit, but I think it is also performance-based. So if you're eating in a calorie deficit, then you're going to lose fat. By definition, if you are in a deficit, you will lose fat. Whether that's going to influence your performance massively or not is something that you have to consider yourself. So if you're eating in a calorie deficit, you're probably going to see a small dip in your performance. So it's really important that you look at, do you really need to lose the fat from your legs? So if you feel like you've got too much fat on your legs in aesthetics, so if you'd rather have less fat on your legs, but your speed is good, your change of direction is good, you're able to run at the back end of games, you're able to last 90 minutes, and through your training, your performance measures, like the ones I discussed, are improving, then I wouldn't worry about losing weight on your legs or fat on your legs. And the same for any other areas. So having a low body fat and therefore a lower weight can help you be faster. But if you're in the period of your season, in season, like most of us are at the moment, depending on where you are in the world, you're going to have a small dip in performance. You might not feel as if you have as much energy to perform. And if you've got fat to lose, it might be better to do that in the off season or potentially in the pre-season as well, where results are not quite as crucial as during the season. So if you need to lose fat from a certain area or you need to lose overall body fat, feel free to do that at a time where it's low risk to do so, which is the off season or potentially the pre-season. But you can't decide where you're going to lose the weight from. So you just need to eat in a calorie deficit when you have the ability to, and you're going to lose fat there. So I hope that answers the question, and always we stress on looking at performance measures rather than aesthetic measures or where you think you need to lose fat from, pretty much. So just look at back at the Instagram and we'll see if there's any other questions going on here as well. So Mohammed's come in with a question, which is the best workout for core strengthening, which is a great question. And core strengthening is a really broad area because our trunk is for so many things. It can move in so many different ways. And one of the things it also does is it resists movement. So it resists rotation and it resists extension as well in movements like sprinting. So it's quite varied. So there's not one best workout or one best movement, but we need to make sure that our core workouts have variety. So we need to make sure, like I said, we have anti-extension, we have anti-rotation. Those two things are really going to help performance and prevent lower back injuries. But we probably also need to have some flexion in there. So any spinal flexion exercises have been demonized a little bit by kind of the strength and conditioning community and sometimes the medical community. But we generally think that if you do move in a certain way in a sport, or you can move in a certain way, then to a degree, you can do those movements in training. And potentially, if you don't do those movements in training, you're doing your body a disservice, because when you do go into that situation in a game or in your everyday life, you might not be prepared to do that. So you want to make sure that your core workout has variety. You want to train it like any other muscle group. So you want to periodize as you normally would. So if to strengthen the legs, for example, we would start with higher volumes. So we'd have kind of more sets, more reps, sets of 10 to 15, and then we'd work more on strength after that period, where we'd have sets of 3s, 4s, 5s, 6s, and then we should have that in there. And we should also have some power exercises in there. So people don't really know that they can train their core to be powerful. And there's a couple of different ways. We can do rotational med ball work. We can do straight leg setups with a weight or a medicine ball overhead and try and be really explosive with that. So once we're strong, we're stable, we can increase speed of movement. So we need variety and we need to make sure we're ticking all the boxes and essentially doing all the things that we know that the trunk can do under load and under good different conditions. And if we do that, we're probably going to be quite a versatile athlete and potentially a good athlete as well. So I hope that answers your question, Mohammed. We'll see what else is going on. Let's have a look at the Facebook community and see what's coming in. So we've got a question from Mikey Waters that says, do you suggest training with a broken foot that's been healing for 3 weeks? So obviously I haven't heard your doctor's diagnosis on that one, but really simply, you should always be training if you can be. So that doesn't mean you should be out there taking free kicks every 10 seconds, but it definitely means that you can train in the gym. So obviously if your foot's broken, upper body is a yes. You can work on upper body hypertrophy or strength, or wherever it is you need to improve. So that's an obvious one, and you could pretty much do that 3 to 4 times a week, almost every other day. You can also do different types of conditioning. So there's been some really cool ways that footballers have been able to set up rowing machines. So a really good way of continuing to keep your aerobic fitness up with a broken foot is to hook one foot in a rowing machine and to have a foam roller next to the rowing machine. And if you put the leg that's got the broken foot on top of the foam roller, you actually be able to move forwards and backwards on the rowing machine. And that's a simple way that you can continue to do aerobic conditioning. You can also use things like battle ropes as well to make sure that your return to play is going to be easier, because you're not going to have to build up such a base of training. In terms of lower body strengthening, you're really going to have to speak to the doctor you're working with, and it depends what stage you're going to be at. Generally, it might be okay to do single leg work. So the foot that isn't broken, you're going to be able to train that leg. And you're actually going to get some training effect on the injured leg as well. So there is something, a phenomenon where if we train the left leg, the right leg's going to get stronger to a degree. So that's something you can do. And that's a really useful thing you can do. And potentially, you're going to be able to train the leg with the broken foot by doing things like leg extensions, hamstring curls, anything where the foot is not pressing it against something, like a deadlift, a squat, or a kind of leg press. you're probably going to be good to go. So I would check that with a doctor or whoever you've been working with, whether it's a physio at this stage or whether it's still a doctor. But you should definitely still be training. When it comes to technical training, that's where you really need to follow your doctor's guidelines closely, because you don't want to come back to training too quickly, and then potentially you're going to risk a further injury or delaying your return to play. So make sure that you do train as much as possible without affecting the injury, and then you can try and find out what you can actually do to help you get back quicker when you are healthy. So I hope that helps. So we got a question from, I think, Sam, come in on the Facebook community page and the Instagram page, so I'll make sure I get to you, but I'm going to need some clarification. So he's just said, tell me one thing which is too bad for a football game. So Sam, if you send me some clarification on the Facebook community, or if you post in the Facebook community after this live session is done, I can try and get a little bit more detail about your question and then help you out there, okay? So I'll have a look on the Instagram page as well and see what else is coming in. Great question coming in from Suki on the Instagram page, and he's asked, how early and at what age can you introduce weights for youth players? And he's talking about younger players, so under 10s, under 11s, under 12s. And he's asking about whether it's going to stunt the growth of a child or of a youth athlete or a youth player to lift weights. So there, in terms of how early can you start lifting weights, or can you start delivering resistance training in some form to your players, there's essentially no age which is too young to introduce loading in some form of resistance training. However, what we do need to consider is the group that you're working with, or the people you're working with, is it a small group? Do you have a good coach to athlete ratio? And can they listen to instructions? And can they follow out instructions? Because obviously safety is going to be really crucially important, especially if you are in a gym setting. So first things first, if they can follow instructions and be safe, it doesn't matter what age they're at, they're going to be able to do some form of resistance training. The next thing we need to look at is stunting of growth a myth? So there's a whole bunch of position statements out there from kind of national strength and conditioning associations, and especially the NSCA, which is the American Strength and Conditioning Body. They've got a really clear kind of position statement on youth strength training, and they basically say that there's been no good research to find that where there's good supervision and appropriate loads are being lifted, there's no such thing as stunting growth of someone who's a youth athlete or a child who is lifting weights. So there's a couple of reasons why that myth is around. One of the simple ones is that weightlifters, so Olympic weightlifters who do snatch and clean and jerk, are generally very short, because the goal is to get the bar from the floor to overhead. So if you're 7'2", you have to move the bar a greater distance than if you're really short. So generally, for kind of weight matched individuals, weightlifters are short, which is why people think that being short stunts your growth. I think any research that has found that kind of resistance training stunts growth is not really founded in good research and good science, and has since been disproved. So I don't think there's anything to worry about there, but we just need to make sure that we have good coach to athlete ratios, and is what we're doing age appropriate. So using something like a 4 or 5 kg kettlebell or medicine ball held in front of the body for a goblet squat is probably going to be a really good way to improve lower body strength. It's going to increase bone density in children. That's going to have an impact in the game and later on in life as well. So resistance training is going to be really good for youth athletes, and hopefully is going to make sure that they can train and play and actually match up to the demands of the game. So when someone walks down the stairs, they can be up to kind of 4 times body weight going through their calf or their lower body while they're on one leg. So no one's ever going to do a split squat or a single leg squat with 4 times body weight. Yeah, we throw our kids and young players into playing football or general life when they kind of jump off trees or jump off climbing frames. So there's always high forces that are going through kids' bodies. We need to do a better job at preparing them for those high forces. So there's no reason why resistance training is not okay, but jumping off a tree is fine. Because able to get greater forces, weigh multiple times body weight going through a child's body when they jump out of a tree than if they actually do a goblet squat with control with a coach with 4 or 5 kilos. So Suki, like you've just clarified, one-on-one coaching is going to be fantastic. It means that you're going to be able to pay real good attention to details. And if they're under the 12s and they can kind of, if they can take the instructions you're giving them and they can carry out what you're asking them to do, if there's a focus on good quality movement and not on loading, obviously you're not going to brag about how much your under 12s are squatted. We're not trying to get them to squat 300 kilos, but we're trying to increase their lower body strength. So then they're more resilient, they have less chance of getting injured, and then they can also go out and they can try and become more powerful when they do more power training later on in their careers and in their lives. So I think it's really good that you're looking at starting strength conditioning and especially resistance training with kids as young as that. So I hope everything goes well with those guys, and I'm sure you're going to have good success with them. So yeah, good luck with those under the 12s. Just got some stuff coming in on the Facebook community as well now, so I'll have a quick look back over here. See what's going on. So Tariq's asking if his gym program with simple exercises like goblet squats, dumbbell lunges, Romanian deadlifts, press-ups and pull-ups is a good session and a good way to start his resistance training. As far as I remember, Tariq is 15 or 16. So, Tariq, you're ticking all the boxes there. You've got double leg strength exercises that are more knee dominant, potentially like goblet squats. You've got single leg supported exercise like dumbbell lunges, Romanian deadlifts, so you've got lower body hinge movement in there. And you've also got a push and a pull. So those things make a good components of a strength and conditioning program. Most strength and conditioning programs include variations of those exercises and deliver them in different ways with different sets and rep schemes. So it seems like you've got the real good components of a strength and conditioning program there. What you just need to do is make sure you find ways to apply a progressive overload in a safe way that matches with your footballing schedule. So if you keep the things you're doing there and you continue to apply stressors and you continue to make things a little bit harder, whether that's just adding reps into your sessions over a period of time, if that's adding an extra set here and there, or adding variety in some way by maybe coming down from 10 reps to 5 reps and going to a slightly heavier load, then you're going to have real good success with those fundamental things over a good period of time. So, Tariq, it feels like you're ticking all the boxes there, and I'm sure you're going to see good progress, hopefully become more resilient to injury and have greater performance there as well. So it looks like you got some good things going on. We'll look back at the Instagram page and see what's happening there. So we've got a question coming in from Jonas asking how important is strength today in today's football? And as a strength and conditioning coach, I'm obviously going to say it's really important. But the reason why I think it's really important is because the game has developed in such a way where there's so many people trying to play the game that the best athletes are always, always, always going to get to the highest levels. So even if it's deceiving sometimes and you might see players that you think are slow, they're probably going to be a very, very good athlete and a better athlete than those at lower levels to them. So leg strength is really important for a number of reasons. One of the reasons why leg strength is important is that if we have a high amount of leg strength, we can have a high amount of lower body power, which means we can jump high, sprint fast, and we can essentially be athletic. Whereas if you've got a lower level of strength, so we can't produce as much force, then our power has to be a lower level. So if we're this strong, we can't be this powerful. So strength is just the ability to produce force in essentially an unlimited time, so very slowly, and power is the ability to produce force very quickly. So we need to make sure that our footballers are powerful. And to do that, we need to have good levels of leg strength to do that. So if we make sure that we have good levels of leg strength, we pretty much make sure that our ceiling is not capped by how strong we are. And it's also going to kind of transfer directly to the game as well. So it's not just going to transfer indirectly by being able to give us the ability to be fast and change direction quickly. Strong legs give us the ability to decelerate, okay, very rapidly. and then give us the ability to change direction rapidly. It's also going to help us with ball striking and things like that as well. So lower body strength is kind of a common denominator for success in a whole host of running sports. And I think that's quite widely accepted. So lower body strength really is crucial, and it's one of the main things that you probably need to be training for whilst you're in the gym. So there's a lot of other kind of auxiliary things that you need to train around that, like speed, change of direction, and more kind of technical based drills. But strength is so important. So I hope that answers your question. As a strength and conditioning coach, maybe I'm a little bit biased with that. It kind of is in my my job title, so I can't exactly exactly say no, but really is my, in my opinion, I think that's quite a widely accepted thing at the moment. And I think it will continue to be. So technical coaches and football coaches, they'll often talk about how strong players are, but then they might not want them to be in the gym a lot, okay? So I just think the fact that technical coaches, football coaches are talking about players being strong and fast, it means that it's obviously very important, and it's one of the criteria they might use to actually select players. So strength is going to be really important. So guys, it looks like 30 minutes has flown by. I hope I got to a lot of your questions. I'm sorry if I didn't get to all of your questions. If you guys are using our programs, you're going to have access to the Facebook community. So feel free to post in the Facebook community anytime. Either one of our S&C coaches will get back to you. If we can't get back to you, hopefully we're going to have some discussion within the group with some of our members who have got our programs. So hopefully you guys are going to find out what's going on with some other people as well, and you'll hear from other people's experiences. Suki in the Instagram page is asking what my name is. So my name's Yanni. So hope you enjoyed that, Suki, and I hope I helped you out. If you sign up for the Academy, you might hear a little bit more of me in the form of some of the kind of audio recordings we've done to answer some of your questions that have been coming in. So guys, I promise that we might have a kind of treat for you. And what we're offering at the moment is 15% off from the program. And all you have to do is add Live15 into the little box when you go to the checkout, and you'll be getting 15% off if you do that, okay? So just add Live15, lowercase, should work. If you have any problems with that, just send us an email and let us know. Guys, I hope I did get around to a lot of your questions today. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Maybe I need to rest after speaking for this long non-stop. But guys, I hope you enjoyed it, and I'm sure we'll do another one soon. Just keep an eye on our Instagram story and on the Facebook community page, and we'll make sure we're publicized ahead of time. And hopefully we'll find some times that work well enough so we can get around to enough of you in different time zones. So guys, I'll speak to you later. Hopefully see you when we do the next live video. Thanks for your support, and we'll speak to you soon. Cheers, guys. Everyone on the community page, if you've got any other questions, feel free to just drop them down into the Facebook community, and we'll try and get back to you soon, okay? Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks for tuning into the Match Fit Conditioning Podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please share it with one of your teammates. To learn more about the Match Fit method and to start your training with us, visit www.matchfitconditioning.com. We'll show you how to gain an edge on the pitch at an elite level by transforming your fitness level, nutrition, and mindset.